slightly late on the start, because I've trying to find the quote I wanted. Bear with. It's your lot. I had
it. You don't normally bother. You just go, and I didn't have a quote.
Well, I had one, and I'm not, because I had one. I'm quite keen on, you know, finding it again.
Well, I've got five.
For some reason, subtitles are not playing on. Oh, it is now.
I've got five, so I'm prepared.
Oh, not a competition.
No wagering.
Hang on. This way, it's just coming up in a minute. Oh, blast! It went past it. it's your lot fault. I mean, I was ready to go and everything. Notice I won't blame myself. Right, hang on, coming up, it's coming up.
Mary and Debbie, have you seen this one before?
No.
Don't ask questions like that, woman, not bloody... oh, you
okay,
naughty...
I'll ask it later.
You naughty... Now you went... Because of that, it went past it again. Right.
I've never heard that question before in my life.
Right, that's it. Went past it again, so Kirby gets one of these even before we've actually started recording.
Oh, no! Oh, Kirby.
It was for... I was just curious.
Right, that's about scoreboard.
Right. And nobody ever asks us that during a recording.
No.
Yes, we do. I've been listening to past shows. Every single week, Kirby asks the question, have you seen this?
I give my opinion. I always have to say whether I've seen it before. Nobody asks me.
Oh, well, they're only
interested. Yeah, I usually get, Debbie, have you seen this before? Nope.
Now I've completely gone past that bit now three times because of you. Lot. Right, I'm getting cross now.
Next week's, is it Nymon or Nimon?
Nymon.
Nymon.
I'm in trouble. Nymon.
Nymon.
No, you have to go, Lord Nymon. The Lord part is needed.
Lord.
That's got to be the quote, all of us. You'll understand.
Okay. Lord
Nymon. Lord Nymon. Oh, God. Is the worst overacting you will ever see on Doctor Who.
I don't believe it. Got it.
I don't know if there was a lot of that in this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's quite a lot in this one.
All right, be quiet.
Especially the monsters.
Be quiet.
All right.
Oh, hang on, I'm just waiting, because every time I move the mouse, the playing thing goes over the words I need to use my quote. So I'm going to go live on Facebook presently. So I'm going to do the countdown. It's going to be on the screen. You won't be able to see it, but I will.
Isla, shush.
Ooh, you nearly lost some points then. Here we go. Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 411. I'm Adam, and oh, my fingers, my arms, my legs, ah, my everything, oh. And here's Debbie Melrose.
I just wish you'd get on with it. I've got a schedule to keep.
Mary Lang.
We'll go that way, and we'll call it East.
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I wondered why I hadn't been paid.
This week, we're going to be reviewing a Doctor Who story called... I've forgotten already. Oh, something about Nightmare of Eden. Nightmare of Eden? Or is it Nightmare on Eden? That's not of Eden, isn't
Nightmare
it?
Nightmare of Eden. Eden.
So you only say these things. Kirby cannot resist the temptation to say things that the precise... Oh, God, I get that. Anyway, I'm going to get up the scoreboard, because before we actually came on there, Kirby already lost the point for putting me off. So I'm just going to load up the points, because I think we're going to do a quiz today. Even though I haven't actually previously done a quiz for this particular story, I do have this.
Oh, Golden Bennett.
So you'd be lucky. I've shuffled these cards, so you might end up with ones you've already had.
With different questions. I always get the English ones, and everyone gets upset.
Do they? We'll have to put that to the test. Right, so I'm just opening up the scoreboard. That sounds a bit like the old generation game. Opening up the scoreboard. A quiz yay, says Lillian Robin. Right there. Oh, everybody's on there. Right, let's delete. What was the thing we made up? The new rule. You're not allowed to choose yourself in the person at the bottom. That was a new rule, wasn't it, that Debbie made up so she could make sure she wins.
You did not make that up. You did.
That was my idea. I think it was your idea.
Been so long since
it's a good idea, though. So there you go. Right, so Kirby is on -1. There we go.
So but as still, we haven't done a quiz for so long, what about all the minuses I'm on?
Yeah, this is why we're doing it, because I've been trying to listen. Yeah, no, I'd cancel them. They're all cancelled. Oh, you got all on. Oh, hang on, you were on a minus anyway for talking over my almost talking over my introduction by telling Isla off.
Sorry.
Anyway, so this week, like I say, it's Nightmare of Eden, which begins. I've got itchy neck. I just scratched my neck there. With the title sequence, and I'll try not to be irritated by the appalling rendition of K9's voice that is getting more and more teeth wrenching through every episode, and very distracting as well.
Aster?
Can I just speak before you interrupt me? How long was that? I didn't even get into the episode. I just want to say that now we've got so many impressionists around. Surely they could have found someone who could have done an impression of John Leeson's version of the voice.
Why didn't they find someone who could do it?
Beg your pardon?
Why didn't they? That's why I was going to say is why couldn't they find someone who could do a better version?
Yeah, somebody who could do an impression of K9. Surely, even Mike Yarwood probably could have done it. Mike Yarwood is a famous impressionist from this era of television, wasn't he, Debbie?
Yes, he was.
Well, at the time that they were recording these, they had no idea that the voice that K9 had was so popular. Mm. They thought they were doing a better voice for K9.
It was
such a shame, isn't it?
Anyway, that's enough of Mr. Brierly, Brearly, or whatever you want to call him. Kirby wanted to interrupt me, didn't you, Kirby?
Well, no, I wanted to talk to you about something with K9.
Oh, yes.
Before we start.
Okay.
Since you've got John Leeson coming to the convention, have him tell you the story of when he lost a K9 voice impression thing at a convention.
Did he?
He did.
Oh, God, this is
so I drifted then. What did you say?
It was at his first United States convention. They didn't introduce him, so he was in the audience, and they decided to have a K9 voice.
Oh, I heard this. I've heard of this. Yes.
And he lost.
Yeah, I heard that. You told me that. Told that story once before. I'll let you off the fact you've told it once before, because that's actually quite a good one. Alan T. Butcher says, Brierly was aiming to seek the inner essence of K9 rather than an impersonation. Right. Not good enough. Moving on. Can we do the episode now? Can we?
Sorry?
Can we do the episode now?
No.
Right, then. So with this, basically the story starts with these spaceships. There's one that's all sort of floating through space and then dematerializes. Then David Dacre, Iron Grun himself... Grun. Did you interrupt me again, Kirby?
No,
what I was trying to say in the first place. Iron Grun.
Yeah, David Dacre, Iron Grun himself, and of course, is not overacting in this story too much. Not too later on.
No.
Is sort of the captain of this spaceship, and everybody. There seems to have a load of passengers that all seem to be wearing very odd silver.
It's very 2010 Space Odyssey, isn't it? Yeah.
Master.
Yes.
I pointed out on the Facebook page about half an hour ago.
You did?
It looks like the BBC designers had been watching the 1951 movie When Worlds Collide. And I've got a comparison picture showing from When Worlds Collide. That's exactly where they got that.
And the listeners, viewers, if you join the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join, you might be absolutely enthralled by to be able to see that particular thing that Kirby has posted. Alan T. Butcher says, Brierly stroke Brierly failed. Personally, I think it's Brierly, but I think it's Brierly, because I before E, except after C, isn't it, Debbie?
Usually.
It could be Brierly, because a friend Brierly, is F-R-E... Yeah. Somebody will know, won't they?
Except you pronounce things... You put...
Are we really bringing up the topic now?
God, here we go.
There's no F in left in lieutenant.
What's that got to do with whether you pronounce it Briley or Brayley?
We have the aluminium aluminium conversation, I think.
Okay, I reckon it could be Brayley because it's the.
I thought it was Brayley, as in Briar. You
so
know.
We decide our own way of pronouncing
Briley,
it.
Yeah, I always thought it was Briley.
Yeah, but that's just me.
Well, somebody ought to watch the extras on these DVDs and see how it's pronounced in the extras, because I'm sure somebody would have pronounced it correctly in the extras, wouldn't they? Right, anyway, so people in silver, ridiculous-looking silver suits.
I like the way they complain as well. It's quite funny.
And then there's this other little spaceship, which sort of is just orbiting this planet and then crashes crashes into the other spaceship. Sorry, Dacre's spaceship as it's materializing.
Well, you've got the stoned navigator who
shot. Yeah. Now, what I liked about this, what they tried to do with this particular special effect, one is the planet's got an atmosphere. It's quite clever. No clouds, but it's got an atmosphere. Two, the spaceships are sort of moving sort of across the screen as if to give them some sort of, you know, real motion effect. It didn't quite work, but they did try.
Well with this one, yeah.
They did try.
Well, Master.
Oh, good grief. And the other thing, can I just finish, is the spaceship reminded me of the submarine in Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Yes, Kirby.
It does. There was an entire extra on the DVD about filming the spaceships. One of the higher-ups decided to do the entire special effects with the spaceships on videotape instead of film, which had been tradition. So it only took 3.5 hours to do all the spaceship stuff. But basically the extra is an argument between the head of special effects and the guy who did the filming, because the guy who did the filming didn't like the videotape look. And so he thinks it's rubbish, whereas even Graham Williams said that it looked great.
I think it looks cracking. It's a great use. You could see it's different. You can see it's innovative. Everything becomes that eventually, and it's great to see like one of its first uses.
Laurie Nick says, by the way, it's pronounced Hecate.
Oh, yes.
Hecate. Okay.
Oh,
Hecate.
Sorry. Hecate. I do apologize, Laurie. I pronounced it incorrectly.
If we're referring to a goddess, it's Hecate, yeah.
Well, the reason she's brought it up is because different actors in this story say it differently.
But that's just life, isn't it? Can we get back to the story? Otherwise, I'll skip to episode 4 and be done with it.
I applaud that.
Anyway. Oh, God, here we go. That's a forerunner to what's coming up. Right, hang on. So right there. So the place spaceships have collided and they're now stuck together. What we do get?
I just love that, the whole materializing into another ship, just moving between them.
No, don't mind. That's quite good. But what I thought was quite funny, looking at the fact that the captain sent down a couple of guys to sort of check out, you know, the part where the two spaceships are fused together, and these two guys who look as camp as anything in their sort of shiny black and gold suits and sort of vesty things, and I'm sure these gentlemen were absolutely thrilled to bits to be given those particular costumes, and he's talking into this little communicator to him and getting his big chance to do a scene in Doctor Who, because it's the only scene this actor did, but he's doing it as if he's broadcasting to camera as a sort of what would you call it, like a
news reporter.
Yeah, a news reporter from the location.
That, like, why is he looking at the camera?
Yeah, I was half expecting him to, I mean, he's looking at CCTV, but it did rather sort of look like he was doing a news report. And and then the TARDIS materializes, the Doctor nearly got going, didn't I? Yes.
I was waiting for you to say TARDIS materialized. Notice the chalk all over the TARDIS?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's from a photo shoot for some greeting cards that they made back in Destiny of the Daleks, right. And no one really cleared off the chalk. I've got examples on the Facebook in the thread for
Is that why there's a hoop thing screwed into the side of it as well? If you look behind the doctor's head, there's like a hook thing.
Oh, possibly.
You didn't notice that one then.
These greeting cards were mostly birthday parties, and some get well cards.
Mm.
So they would put the birthday number on the big panel to the right,
okay,
like 4, 5, 6, and sometimes down the sides it would have.
They should do double numbers. I'd like to have.
Can I put this into perspective? Right, this show has been on air now for 12 minutes and 11 seconds. We've got 4 minutes into this episode of Doctor Who. Okay. Right, so
they're running through corridors coming up. So that's
I love
I've gone away and cooked dinner and come back.
I could have gone to the toilet before doing this episode. I wish I had now.
Why do you not?
Well, because the bathroom, there's women in the house and the bathroom's not available at the moment. But I could have gone into the toilet in between women going to the bathroom. So anyway, moving on. I just hope I can last out for the whole show. The captain of the little ship, moody bloke, with a bit of a pop star hairstyle, or is it a porn star hairstyle? I don't know. 1970s porn star hairstyle. Anyway, he arrives in his silver suit to have an argument with David Dacre, who's deliberately sort of playing it straight at the moment because he has to do some overacting. Anity Butcher says, at the current rate, the podcast will be 5 hours long.
Yay!
Hey, girls, remember that time when we didn't have Kirby on and how slick it was?
Yeah, we were done in like an hour and 10 minutes or something.
We did it in less than an hour once.
Yeah.
And it's a 6-episoder.
You want me to go away?
No, we love you. Stop it.
Laurie Nick says, is Kirby interfering?
Isn't he ever?
Anyway, a relationship is not drawn up between the two captains, but the doctor tries to make out that he's a member of, or he's a representative of the Galactic Salvage and Insurance Company.
Well, I like the fact that he checks up straight away.
David Dacre checks up. I'm going to call him David Dacre because I can't remember the
Nobody
captain.
Ever checks up when the doctor says he's something. And this was like a first. It's like, I've checked you out. You're not you.
Yeah, his little knowing smile. Yeah. Like 2068 to 2098, apparently. Not that far off, 2068, to be fair. I'll be dead by then because I don't think I'm going to live to 102. I said 202. That'd be nice. Anyway, right then.
Then you do have to wonder why he continues to trust him. You know, now that he's proven the doctor's a liar, why is he quiet?
Because you just recognise someone who knows what they're doing. You know, like, I think that's how I came to it. It was like, okay, he said he isn't who he is, but he actually sounds like he knows what he's talking about, and that might be the best way to get my ship back on course.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Did you say ship back on course?
I said ship, yes.
I'm going to scratch him back with my wand. Anyway, so the doctor mooches around the... This is an elder wand, this, and it's very good for back scratching. He mooches around the corridors of the ship and observes the second-in-command of the ship, basically give himself a fix of something or other, drugs. And so is the doctor now knows that there's something odd going on, and we, of course, all know there's something odd going on as well. And then Romana goes off and meets Trist. And what's the girl called again?
Della,
that's it.
Della.
Didn't really have to do much acting, probably just as well. And I could never work out... Her one big master. Was that me?
Her one big moment is when she... towards the end, when she's shot in the neck and clutches her stomach.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, you can't blame her for that. That would be a directorial. But I'll tell you what that reminds me of. If you watch Italian footballers, the ball will hit them in the... who is it? Rivaldo. Was it Rivaldo, the famous Brazilian footballer, who one of the other players kicked the ball at him. It hit him in the groin, and he held his head and fell to the ground. So it's a bit like that, really. Anyway, so, yeah, we meet the You can tell the actor who plays Triss is absolutely adoring the opportunity to do this appalling accent.
It's almost
like a Monty Python comedy sort of middle European accent.
According to the info text, they didn't tell him to do that. There were no directorial decrees to do that. He just
joked to do that.
Mm-hmm. Lillian Robin says, Romana's costume is awful. I don't want to cosplay it for a change. Okay.
No,
probably not easy to get hold of, to be fair. Right, so yeah, we have that little meeting
this
thing.
It does seem like Romana's just going through as many juvenile outfits as she can at the moment.
I was wondering if she was robbing her own wardrobe at home, because this looks like the kind of stuff that Lala Ward would just wear.
Oh, well, I wouldn't know that. Anyway, what did I get up to? So basically, we have this scene where we're supposed to be led to believe that he's a bit of a, well, a bit of a twit, really. I mean, yeah, he's a scientist, but he's a bit of a twit. He's a harmless twit, essentially. So he very enthusiastically shows everybody this incredible machine, which basically brings other parts of...
And really winds Romana up.
You know what, the machine,
isn't it?
It's master? A bit like a miniscope, like they had
I was about to say, it's a miniscope.
Like in Carnival of the Monsters.
We did one of these before, a long time ago, didn't we?
But slightly easier to use. You can just walk through the wall and go into these areas.
That guy who had the circus, wasn't it, in one of the Pertwee era?
Wouldn't we just said that, Debbie? That's Carnival of the Monsters. Right, so where's that...
Sorry. I actually did leave the room. I do apologize.
You didn't tell us that, so you don't get any... I'm not deducting points for that because it was quite funny. Alan T. Butcher said, I heard Tom Baker suggest the accent to the Trist actor.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no, Tom Baker. I thought it might have been that. That's a good point.
Wouldn't it be good if you did this accent?
Yeah, I would imagine Tom would do something.
Go on, make yourself look silly. Oh, it'll be brilliant.
It's like when Nicola Bryant got the part of Perry, she went to the interview to do an American accent and made these idiots believe she actually was American. Well, they should have had an American judge of that accent, and perhaps they might not have given her the part. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. So we have these little scenes of Trist sort of showing off the this amazing piece of kit, which basically has little crystals. Within these crystals are environments. And you put the crystal... God's sake.
When you see the little scenes of the various planets other than Eden...
Mm.
Those are all from Space 1999.
Well, there you go. Anyway, right, so we're up to 11
minutes. Space 1999 was made by a different company. They purchased the these little stock pieces of film.
They're always borrowing Gerry Anderson stuff for various BBC sci-fi shows.
Yeah, we've seen bits of UFO in Doctor Who before.
So can we move on?
Right. Have we finished the first episode?
No, we haven't. 11 minutes in and 19 minutes on the podcast.
Well, I've got another thing to point out to you, which is something you pointed out to me that you may not have noticed with this one.
I've noticed a few wobbly sets in this one, to be fair.
Yes.
Quite a few, in fact.
A couple of them, actually.
Yeah, anyway, so there's a scene in which the drugged-up co-captain thing sort of smiles in his way through a rather sort of scary-looking portal. Full of smoke and flames and stuff like that.
And he just wanders in quite happy.
Yeah. And the Doctor... hang on, wait for the... Let me see the DVD, sorry, to catch up with us. The Doctor then sort of examines the machine and sort of has a bit of a bonding session with Trist. Yes.
Master, may I point something out?
We're going to do it anyway, so...
Do you remember when you pointed out the little cubes back in Ark in Space?
Yes.
Cubes? Well, yes. This might be worth a point, Kirby. Carry on.
They cut them into little strips of
they did.
2x2
yes.
and put them around the upper edge of Trist's laboratory.
They did. And the other thing that I wanted to point out and you'd lot to keep an eye on, not just that particular bit of scenery, but if you around those squares are these sort of triangular thingies. And they're also regularly appearing in Doctor Who, Blake 7, and a bit later on, Red Dwarf, before Red Dwarf went even more sci-fi. I beg your pardon?
Well, one of the reasons they appeared in Blake 7 is that the designer of this story also did the designing in Blake 7.
Mm. can we get back to this episode? Right then, yeah, but thanks, Kirby. You got a point for that. Right then, so like you say, yes, a good point. Keep an eye on those. They're getting a bit more battered and cut into smaller bits, and then they'll be put back together to make bigger bits. Anyway, so Romana is shown Eden through this machine. K-9 sort of goes off and shoots stuff and does bad voices. The Doctor then has a bit of a poke around down in the bowels and gets shot by a mystery hat. Oh, God.
In the info text, whoever wrote the info text pointed out that it's a good thing that all of the planets that the gadget could see had short names, and that he didn't have to fit Raxacoracophal Pretorius on there.
Marvelous. Right then, yeah, what have I got up to? Yeah, so the Doctor gets shot by Mystery Hand, and hang on, what's the next scene? Is there somebody in the hospital wing? Oh, it's
when Romana's looking at Eden, she sees somebody looking back at her.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I haven't got to that bit yet.
And Fred was really bothered by that.
Yeah, that was pretty creepy.
Anyway, so they've managed to get hold of the vice captain pilot thing, because he's now in an operating theatre and being watched by David Dacre.
Well, no, you found him because he'd been attacked, didn't he?
Yeah. And then Romana and K-9 find the unconscious Doctor. There's another conversation between David Dacre and the captain of the other ship, what argument, I should really call it. And then, the next scene reminded me of Big Bang Theory and The X Factor, because they come to this lift door, which has basically got the X Factor logo on it. And next door, another door that's got a blatantly sort of colourful stairs sign on it. And,
yes.
Basically go running down the staircase a little bit, which was really did remind me of Big Bang Theory. And then Romana sort of goes into the lab where the window's open for Eden, and sort of looks. She was told, I think, at some point not to go in there, wasn't she? I think, which you know, of course, she is going to be in there.
Yeah, don't go in. I'm going in.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Sort of shenanigans I get up to. Don't go in there. Ooh.
Yeah. So she looks like she's going to wander in there, and the Doctor, Captain, and K-9 sort of go up to the sort of the joining part, the door where the join is, where this strange sort of TV that's not quite tuned in properly door. And so Romana wanders in, and then something shoots her from within the, what do you call it? And K-9 cuts a hole in one of the panels, and out comes a scary monster. And finally, how long did that take us to do one episode of Doctor Who within this
hour.
Podcast? Oh, 24 minutes. Well, just about minutes, just the same length of the episode after I was actually able to speak for a bit.
The thing that goes on to Romana's neck.
Now, I don't know what I want to say about these mandrels, these monsters, now or at the end of the episode.
It's a sting, isn't it?
So I'm going to say at the end of the episode. You might have to remind me. So David Dacre is befriending the Doctor. And even though he's sort of been told he's an agent, he's still sort of staying on his side a little bit. He hasn't sort of said to the Doctor that he thinks he's an agent. And then Della, is it?
Della.
Yeah. Please say I got it right for once.
Della!
Yeah, please for my audio to... Hang on. The audio's off. Oh, God.
When K-9...
How do you think it's gone wrong? Well, bear with. Just turn my audio back on.
When K-9 what?
When K-9 welds the hole back up, you know, the...
Hang on, just turn my audio back on. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
It's been on for 2 hours. That should be long enough, isn't it?
That's disappointing.
It's done an automatic countdown and turns the audio off. It's very irritating, but I can't get around it. Anyway, so where do we get up to?
He hasn't been able to hear us. Okay.
No, shut up. Oh, isn't it good? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was asking the question, the lady. Is it Della?
Della, yeah.
Right, do I get a point? Do I get a point for that?
Why would you get a point?
I finally got someone's name right in this show. Oh, yeah, so she's the one that finds the unconscious Romana.
He gets a point. May I...
quickly, for goodness sake.
I was starting to point something out,
too. Go on, then.
When K-9 welds the P piece of the hole back up that the creature has come out of.
Yeah.
I forget what the creatures are called. The doctor and Irongron hold it in, up, and then a hand appears at the bottom from the other side of the hole
right.
to also hold it up.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that.
I think it's probably the same hand that held Sutek's cushion down.
Quite possibly. I can see you're absolutely thrilled to bits about that. Anyway, so... where did we get up to? I'm trying to move this forward. So...
Well, Debbie mastered it.
Right. Della is preparing some drinkies. And she has a drink available, but while she finds the unconscious Romana, somebody pours some suspicious substance into it, which is highly illegal, I had to point out, into one of these drinks. Then the captain turns up and grabs the drink, and you know at some point the captain is going to drink it, but he doesn't drink it straight away. Canine, I beg your pardon?
Is it called Mickey Finning in America?
I don't know. Okay. you're asking me that question because I wouldn't know.
What was the question?
Drink spike.
Is it Mickey Finn?
I've heard that
when you put something in a drink, yeah, that knocks somebody out, yeah, it's called Mickey Finn. It's also called a rape drink.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay, so he does eventually drink. It does look like a cup of night nurse or day nurse. Anyway, he does drink it. I know that's green. That was a joke. We'll let me off bit that one. I just wanted to say it did look like a cup of cough medicine. And I think the doctor sort of more or less tells Trist that he's got to turn off this machine of his because it's very unstable. So he does turn it off, just so as we can believe that he's not a baddie at this point. And then David Dacre goes into comedy, couldn't give a toss mode, basically. It's so funny.
Yeah.
And the captain of the other ship sort of makes out he hasn't noticed it, because later on, as we find out, he's in it as well. But, so it's really, really good stuff, that. K-9 manages to go through the out-of-tune door briefly. And then he's doing some jobs for the Doctor. The Doctor then goes down the Big Bang Theory lift. Sorry, the X-Factor lift. And then he gets chased by this very, it's not suspicious, weird bloke in a silver suit and wearing glasses.
No, he chases the weird bloke through umpteen rooms with the same people in.
Didn't he chase him because he was being watched by him initially?
Yeah,
what I'm saying. So he chased him and they went through the same rooms where everybody, all the extras were put in different positions.
The same seat every time. Did you notice? Everyone else was the same apart from the person that stopped him each time.
Oh, yeah.
Trust you, I thought that might be the case, but I couldn't be bothered to check it. But yeah.
I was just watching. It was like, that's the same person.
Don't worry about it, Debbie. It's Doctor Who.
I wasn't worried. I thought it was brilliant.
Anyway, so David Dacre is then sort of looking at what looks like a lump of ice or quartz or something like that in a very sort of couldn't give you a toss way. Very, very funny. And Trist comes up and has a pointless conversation with him. And then a mandrill wanders through this doorway and scares Romana, then gets shot by someone. Then the doctor stumbles through. And then there's some more sort of candid conversations between Trist and Della. I should remember the Dell because it's the Slamson's old football ground. The Dell. And I haven't had anything come through on the feed. So I'm going to make sure I've not missed anything. Yeah, so I'm just moving forward a little bit because it's a boring conversation. And then he comes and has a chat with the doctor. And then the chap from Coronation Street, who is in the image of the Fendal, turns up as a... Well, he's obviously just come in from a gay bar, judging by the costume he's wearing. Only thing he's lacking is the Freddie Mercury-style moustache. But he does turn up in a very sort of homoerotic uniform, shall we say. And he immediately takes a disliking to the Doctor because he doesn't believe the Doctor's story about what he is, and his little friend, and takes a disliking to Romana. And you've all gone quiet when I said about him being the bloke from Coronation Street who was...
don't watch Corrie.
No, so this is in the 70s when Ivy Tilsley was still alive. Yeah, he was Ivy Tilsley. Shut up, I'm just explaining for people who do watch Coronation Street, Ivy Tilsley's husband.
One of those guys... Okay, sorry.
Yeah, he was also, he was some, he, remember the Gran in Image of the Fendal? The Gran?
Yeah.
Who had the rock salt.
Oh, yes, yes.
He was the Gran's grandson.
Yes, yeah.
Or maybe he just called a Gran for the sake of it. I don't know. Oh, anyway,
it was his nan. Yeah.
It was anyway. It was him. He played that character. What?
Master. Master.
Yes.
The other guy, the other of those two,
yes,
is Michael Kreese's brother, Peter Kreese.
Is it?
Is Ben and Polly. Ben's.
Yes,
brother.
I know who he is. Oh, for goodness, yeah. I didn't know that. I'm not getting the point because you interrupted me. Right, so.
And he was also had appearances in EastEnders, the other soap opera of that nature.
He did. Right, fine. Right. Anyway, so they basically, the man you're talking of, Michael Crazy's brother, sort of waves a probe around the Doctor to find traces of Vrax, the drug, and then he goes on the run. And they get to the end of the episode where the Doctor, I think, where does he go into? Yeah, they both run into the Eden window, shall we say. Episode 3, can we get on to episode 3? I can't believe it. Where are we? 38 minutes into the show.
What did that happen?
God knows. I wish it was in episode 5. Oh, there isn't any. Anyway, so they run through, like I say, it's a long, long recall on that episode. So where are we? It's like a nearly a 3-minute recall on that one. So they're in hiding.
I have an explanation why they ran out of material there.
Go on then.
There was a little bit of an argument during the second recording block between Tom Baker and Alan Bromley.
They're going to say Anthony Butcher.
Director.
Oh, yeah, because he went off in a huff, didn't he? Because of his
yes,
wife.
And,
yeah.
Well, no, Graham Williams basically took him upstairs and said, "You're out of here." And Alan Bromley took his director's stuff and left. Graham Williams then directed it himself for the rest of it. And Alan Bromley never directed anything again and retired.
No, he went into full retirement straight after, yeah, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. There you go. Can I carry on now?
Yeah, right. We thought it'd be quite interesting.
Well, it was interesting.
Oh, right, it was interesting. I didn't say it wasn't interesting. I said, can I carry on? Anyway, so they're hiding in the Eden thing, and some these green-eyed monsters, literally, the mandrills, start mooching around while they're hiding. And then, of course, I suppose we have to call these police officers, aren't they? Sort of come looking for the Doctor.
The filth, space filth.
Yeah. And he just doesn't like the Doctor straight away, does he? Hang on, my microphone's...
He thinks he's the drug runner from the word go, doesn't he? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because he scanned him and he had drugs on him.
Well, he's got the right attitude. He's just got the wrong person. And, while they're hiding in the Eden window, the mysterious scarred man appears. And, obviously, this is the man that has been mentioned in the story before, that the man they thought was dead. Della's boyfriend.
He's getting better.
Because I think Trist was supposed to have shot him, but didn't do a very good job. He's got little scratch marks on his face because he's had a bit
of an eye. And isn't he something to do with the space rozzers as well? He's, like, busting the drug ring or something, isn't
he?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so him and Doctor and Romana team up with K-9. And
they explained his role, but I didn't quite get it.
Well, K-9, he's just the dog of the Doctor, really.
He's a thin dog, sweetheart.
So anyway, the mandrills go on the rampage while the captain watches it all on the telly, laughing his head off. Rather like we are. So
it's we are. Yeah. I was going to say he's basically us at this point.
And there's a woman there screaming that does look like Alma from Coronation Street, funny enough. That's a woman that Alma, she was from the Carry On films. Amanda.
Now, I knew who she was.
Amanda Barry, that's it. Films, I don't think he is Amanda Barry, but doesn't look like her. Anyway, so it's quite funny, the fact that it's very farcical, the fact that they're all sort of getting murdered or killed by these mandrills. Although you know
it is a really funny scene, you know.
Yeah, it's really good. And then the mandrills, when the mandrills attack any important characters, all they do is hug them. And you just want to give them hug back, don't you? Oh, you lovely cuddly mandrills.
Look at all the love going on in the cabin.
I love their boots as well. Anyway, so the mandrill comes and cuddles the Doctor for a bit, but then K-9 shoots it. Bit mean, isn't he, giving him a cuddle? So the Doctor's obviously doing some technical skullduggery to try and get the ship separated, and I do love the is it the superior officer that doesn't have a funny hat when he's sort of communicating with the chap from Coronation Street. He looks a bit odd where he hasn't got a gay icon hat on. anyway, let's move on a bit. And then there was a little conversation between the captain of the other ship and Triss that sort of led to us supposed to be suspicious of their, you know.
Yes, there's definitely something going on.
If you hadn't already worked it out beforehand. Anyway, so meanwhile, a mandrill gets electrocuted and turns to dust. Ooh.
And it becomes the drug.
Yes. that obviously the doctor knows immediately what's going on there, and then the handsome bloke and Romana exit Eden, and that was happened just before the going to dust bit. I just remembered that bit, that's what I said about it. Romana hides from the police and canine.
She goes to find Della, doesn't she?
She goes to find Della, and then canine operates some sort of gun thing, and that's right. Then the captain starts, his drugs start wearing off, and he doesn't know what he actually needs. He knows he needs something, and he thinks Romana has it. And of course, Romana is a bit scared, so she starts showing her teeth, like what you should do when you're scared, apparently. And she's trying to press the activation button for this ploy that the doctor's put together.
No, they're actually separating the ships.
Yeah, there's a ploy the doctor put together, separating the ships. But eventually, of course, she does press the button. Eventually, after she gets threatened by the police bloke, and as she presses the button, something weird happens to the doctor. He goes all wibbly wobbly, and that's the end of that episode. I can hear rumblings upstairs. I hope it's not a rumbling of me getting told off. Again, that would be Kirby's fault for...
Why? What have you done this time?
Talking too loudly, apparently. I'm trying to talk a bit quieter now, but there you go. We've got a long, long tail back. And then when the ships do separate, eventually. And that's right. And then Romana gets a chance to run away from the police officer bloke again. And there's another really weird sort of aggressive conversation, almost into camera, of the police chap and the captain of the other ship sort of threatening each other, and some bodies are carried away. Della's has a conversation with, she's a very sort of flat actress, and she didn't really have much to her, to be fair. I don't think she's a bad actress, I just don't think she doesn't react to anything.
Yeah, she's not actor.
And then there's stuff going off down the ship, down in the hold of the ship. The doctor sort of is hiding on the little ship, and then they interview Trist, who sort of pretends he's got nothing to do with it, and tries to implicate the doctor more. I'm skipping forward here because we should be at this stage of the other thing anyway. And then Della gets arrested as the drugs runner, and then the bloke that's arrested her gets knocked out by being hit on the arm by a mandrel, and then all the police turn up in the lab, and the doctor at this stage knows that it's Trist, and one of the mandrels gets killed. Don't kill it, it's valuable, and he shoots the controls of the machine, and then him and the captain of the other ship sort of basically leg it and think they've got away with everything, and
they haven't, because they're trapped.
Because the doctor has managed to get their coordinates and turns Trist's machine against him.
Yep. And, that's genius. I love that bit.
And, they basically bring the baddies to the police, and that's
it. Hand them over. They go without a fight.
The scene where Trist says, "Dr. Garber, I was doing it. I needed the money for my research. You're a scientist on his own." He just said, "Go away." And he said it twice, quietly and calmly. Go away.
That was almost my quote.
It was awesome, almost my quote too, but that's why I said you, I couldn't find it. And I found one I preferred, and that essentially, apart from the cheesy enders.
Your quote was also good, one of my alternate quotes.
Oh, was it? Okay. Well, that, apart from the cheesy affirmative ending to the episode, that was good. So, right, this story, if you don't mind, where are we up to now? It's, 41 minutes. This is awful. Alina Roberts said this story is rubbish, but not as hilariously rubbish as Nymon. I haven't done Nymon yet, Lillian. Anyway, right. So I'm just going to try and... Because you know what I'm like. I like Doctor Who. And when I don't think this is the worst thing ever. There's... All right, I'm going to say what I like about it. Right, I love the fact that in 1978, I think this story is made, and they were trying to make a point on the dangers of drugs and drug addiction and drug running and people trying to make money out of drugs and stuff like that. And I loved also the fact the mandrels were the drug.
Because
I didn't realise, when I watched the first time, I didn't know that was going to happen. I thought that was brilliant. And I think they did the best they could at the time with sort of rendering that. Although what I didn't understand were the other mandrels that just died didn't sort of crumble into dust. Obviously, they did make a point saying that one was electrocuted, so they have to do something to them to turn them into dust to make the drug. I don't know. But it was a bit weird where...
It certainly did feel like that they had to kill them in a certain way to make the drug. Yeah.
That would only make it... Otherwise, the first mandrel that died turned into to the drug, and they would have known a bit too soon in the story. I liked, what they were trying to do with the ships colliding. I liked the sort of sinisterness and the backstory and stuff like that. There was a bit too much filler in some ways, but it didn't bother me too much. I think they wanted to try and make it out to a four-part story. Love some of the performances in it. For me, what it was lacking, the mandrels themselves, they did look like cuddly bears in a way. but I did like the design of them. I thought they looked quite good. But there were obviously men in costumes. But what I think most monsters of this era were men in costumes. Thinking back, they were better than the prawn anyway, weren't they? But so I haven't got that much of a problem because the concept was really, really good. In fact, the concept of most of this story was really good. I think they just played it for laughs a bit too much in some places. Because
that
they
was
had,
what I was going to say. Yeah. I really do like it, but they played it too much for laughs.
I think... So the concept was good, the story was good, some of the acting was good. I just think the actors should have taken the story a bit more seriously. And also it's a shame, like you say, that the director changing halfway through, that might have had an impact on it. I don't think this is a bad story. I think it's a really good story that could have been done better or could have been rendered better. So everything in it was quite innovative in regards to the content of it and things like that. There were things in it that I thought, that's really clever, I haven't seen that stuff before. So I'm not going to completely slate it as a bad story because it was a story that was good, rendered badly, and it could have been so much better. So for me, I found it quite entertaining as well. I know everybody's going to disagree with me, but just when I see things that are quite... innovative in a story and things that make me
think. I'd actually agree with you, Adam, because I really enjoyed it as a concept. I thought it was brilliant. You had all the animal rights and the drug running and
they just let the concept down a bit because I'll bet you the novel of this is really, really good. I mean, I don't read Doctor Who novels, but
I found it, so I was going to get it.
I've got a funny feeling that it's going to be a really good novel, that one. Because you won't, obviously, when you read it, you'll hear Triss's voice from the TV show.
Oh, God.
That's the only problem you're going to have with it.
Oh, horrors.
Yeah. But, I think it's a pretty good story and just let down by a few factors, and it's a shame. The other factor being, of course, the lack of budget for really good special effects. But I think they did the best with what they had, and I applaud them for it. Right then, Kirby, what did you think?
I completely agree with you. I like the story very much. It's very, very, the concepts and everything. It's just very poorly realized.
Yeah.
With the monsters. And I don't completely agree with you. I don't like the design of the mandrels. They're stupid.
I don't think they're stupid. I just think
they're stupid.
They're trying to do something new, aren't they? And they just didn't quite get it right because they made them look like cuddly teddy bears. That's the thing they got wrong.
Yes, but other than that, it's I was going into this. I first saw this about 3 months ago when I was trying to get ahead of where we are. Yeah. And so I wouldn't be watching fresh the week before we talked about some things. And I went into watching it hearing that it was terrible.
Yeah.
I was very surprised when it wasn't. except for just some of the accents and things like that.
Oh.
I'm done.
Oh. Is that it?
Yes.
Amazing. Debbie, what did you think?
Well, you said it all already.
Exactly. I was going to say.
Aren't I good?
I totally, totally concur. And having come to this as, you know, fresh story, I watched it over a few nights and I actually really enjoyed the concept. And I liked how outraged Romana was when she realized what the machine was, and how the doctor, when he realized the drug was on board, just totally went into "we've got to stop this" mode. And you've said pretty much everything I was going to say. I mean, mandrels, I'm out on the design because we've had worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, blobs with odd protuberances is definitely up as a number one for crazy monsters. But
wait till you see a Naimon.
Yeah, they had just the right air of silly menace that you come to expect and love as a Doctor Who fan. And the big teeth, the big eyes, always googly eyes, and that would have been it. You know, I would have been laughing my head off for the time being. But I just thought the whole concept of the drug running, the rights for the animals that are stuck, and also the fact that corruption is just everywhere, and you know the Time Lords think that they've got rid of this drug, but humans always find another way of finding another hit, another high. And yeah, you said it all basically. So yeah, I actually really do wish that this had been played less for laughs and actually a bit more seriously, and it would have still run, and it probably would have run better, except for running through all the cabins.
Yeah. Well, that's not true. There's got to be a few corridors to run. Yeah.
We are really into the Tom Baker comedy half hour.
Yeah.
Yes, I was going to ask.
But he was still good in it, though, Kirby.
You know, yeah.
When he has to play it straight, he plays it brilliant. And yes, there was laughs in there, but you know, he's just brilliant. He's on his game at this period. Right, changing, and bearing in mind this is a penultimate series. Bearing in mind, now you said about what I said about the mandrels. What I meant about them being the concept of them being the drug and them being turning. That's the concept I liked about them, not necessarily the rendition, the way that they actually looked. I just think they're cute. I think, you know, I quite like that. They're very recognisable and never used again, and never to be seen again.
Hey. Someone needs to make little cuddly ones.
I'll bet somebody has. Someone needs to cosplay them. That'd be cool, wouldn't it? Anyway.
I think someone probably has.
No,
someone
has. Got to have, really. Yeah.
So, this is what everybody's been waiting for. Mary?
Yeah, I think this is pretty forgettable rubbish. I mean, it's no wonder I never hear anyone bring it up or talk about it in any way, bad or whatever, because I think everyone just chooses to, you know, kind of throw it away and forget about it.
Is that your chimes chiming in disagreement?
Well, I mean, I do agree with a lot of what you said, Adam, and I also agree that the concept of the monsters was really good. On paper, I'll bet they looked really good. And whenever they are in like the dark or the fog, I think they come across really well. But as we tend to be subjected to with these BBC things, is that we want to shoot them in bright light, which then, of course, you know, brings out, you know, the real rubbishness of the...
Did you like the zip cover? The zip of the light down the zip?
Yeah. you know, as soon as you fully light them and watch them, you know, lumber around, well, then they become ridiculous. But I agree that the concept of them, you know, probably was very good. I had, after watching episode one, I had to force myself to watch episode two and then drag myself to watch episode three. But, you know, things got better in episode three.
Yeah,
I think Because I found out, well, the director changed. So I think the director of episodes 3 and 4 did things to make it more interesting, because then I was a little more engaged, so I could watch episode 4, you know, without gagging. and this is, you know, yet another story where Tom Baker looks like he's basically checked out. He's just going to have his own fun. I agree that when the scene calls for it, he does play it fairly seriously.
Yes.
But for the most part, he's just kind of, I don't know, farting around, having his own good time. And I read where those lines of, oh, my arm, oh, my leg, and all that was dubbed in by him.
It was so ridiculous.
Yeah, it was his suggestion to do that, and he dubbed all that in.
And it was there for comedy, because I remember when I was at work, there was a point in which my friend Dan, who was a right clown, he'd go into the scanning machine, which is basically a dark room where you load a scanner right with film, and he'd pretend to have an argument with someone, and he'd come out with his shirt round the wrong way and his leg rolled up to make it look like he'd been in a scrap with somebody or other. So it was a bit like that.
But I think that scene could have been way more effective if he had not done that. And something else that I have a problem with is Romana. The very first episode she did, that she filmed, actually, you know, but then we got to see her later. She's this whiny companion, you know, dependent on the doctor. But then she becomes this stronger time lady, you know, who was very capable. But here we are again with a Romana who's once again, you know, grasping and dependent on the doctor to tell her everything to do. So I think her character gets, you know, so bounced around that I don't know what to make of her anymore. I would just as soon forget about this, like most people have.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, thank you, Mary. Sort of. Anyway, right. So I didn't give you
a deductible. Everyone's allowed an opinion.
No, I think her points are acceptable, because I know that people, you know. Oh, God, I've just seen a word in Alan T. Butcher's feedback.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I can't believe it. I'm going to check that's actually translated correct. Oh, my God. I think, yeah. Okay. Well, good luck with that one, Debbie.
Thanks.
right then, let's have a look, see what's come through. Cause
what?
I haven't, what? Have you seen the word?
Or yeah, I'm not saying that. I can't even work out what it says.
No.
Say, Laurie Nix has sent in a fairly lengthy feedback.
And guess who's reading that one, Mary?
Well, I got to find it.
All right.
It's on my feedback section.
Okay.
On Facebook.
Okay. Funny that.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we're going to have a look down the request thing that it was down on that Kirby sent. I presume he did, because I haven't actually checked to see if he did or not.
Of course.
I shouldn't. Why do I even ask? It's ridiculous,
what
really,
does
it isn't it?
Say?
Okay. Where is it then? Right. I've found it. We're going to Chris Miller. I wonder if those things are dripping with wet Merca paint. And then he says, and by golly, that one in the back looks like love child of Sleestak and Darth Vader. And then Burby Cartlett Sloan says, the reason the TARDIS seems a bit... Oh, he's already said that. I'm not going to repeat that one. And then Alan T. Butcher says... It's the Doctor Who. It's time to play music. It's time to light the lights. It's time to meet the Muppets on the Doctor Who tonight.
Get things started.
Yeah. It's time to put our scarves on. It's time to dress up right. I'm not going to do it in the Muppets music. Shut up.
It's time to raise Sonic on the Doctor Who tonight.
Very clever, Alan. You really should go into politics. Why do we always come here? I guess we'll never know. It's like a kind of torture to have to watch the show. Alan! But now let's get things started. Why don't you get things started? It's time to get things started on the most sensational, inspirational celebration, regenerational. This is what we call the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast. Anyway.
Master.
God, I nearly got to the next one.
That middle statement there, why do we always come here? I guess we'll never know. In the Muppet show, that's always done by Statler and Waldorf.
Is it?
Old guys.
Yes,
so
it
that's
is.
Why it's in that tone. It's
okay.
A torture to watch the show.
Okay, thank you. Right, Chris Miller says, Alan T. Butcher and in keeping with the state of current fandom, the two grumpy old men at the balcony who are always saying how terrible everything is are self-proclaimed Doctor Who fans. That's a very good point. She listened to the show, Chris. Laurie Nick says, interfere? Of course, interfere. Always do what you're best at.
That was also going to be a quote that I had if someone had taken one of the others.
Jeff Waddle says, the poor run of stories continues. Tom is barely interested, so neither was I, and it is about when I lost interest in the show until the McCoy era.
Sometimes wonder, has Jeff ever seen Doctor Who?
Ian Kirk says, I've been called into work this Sunday, so will not be doing feedback. Copyright, aww. Mary Bits Lang. And then he says, are you away to check for people smuggling Vraxoin? So and Ian Kirk says, I have not watched the story. I bet you have at some point, Ian. And Mary Lang says, Ian Kirk with a shocked face or emoji, I should say.
And now it's time for Mary Lang.
Now time for Mary to dictate. Lorinx is very long.
Lorinx. She really sent us something here.
I'm going to sit back with my wand in my hand.
And, oh, God, me.
And listen. There we go.
We didn't need to know that.
Well, only viewers will know what I'm actually talking about. I'm sitting with my wand in hand. Carry on.
So Laurie Nick says, so I yawned through the first episode of this. Romana's fugly shamata was a real turnoff. I miss Romana One's astrological fashion choices.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, anyway, before giving up completely, I decided to view it as a mild altered state experience. Not exactly mind-blowing, but also not the kind of bad trip where a friend has to calmly talk you down. So, two ships don't pass in the night, blah, blah, blah. Then there's a bumbling Germanish scientist who's really into that early psychedelia look.
Germanish.
John Sebastian. Oh, that's good. He did look like that. He somehow has that machine from Carnival of Monsters with a few added bells and whistles. There's a totally high flight crew. I blame the mandrills. Then the passengers of the luxury liner and drug agent who are really into the Buggles by the look of them. And large Muppet monsters that made no sense at all. A bright spot in all the chaos were the underused but fabulously overacting flight stewards, who no doubt danced the night away in one of those clubs on Kensington High Street. I kind of want a whole episode of the stewards and the luxury passengers interacting, then getting pummeled by Muppet mandrels, but that's just me. But wait, how can I forget the equal opportunity Freudian response to last time's episodes, where the Doctor is menaced by a large protrusion? This time, he is menaced by a large plant with... Like many disappointing drug dreams, you are left with some blonde happy chick making a profound sounding comment that won't make any sense when you snap back to reality. Though Electric Zoo is a totally cool name for the garage band you plan to start. Oh, that's good. Very good.
And then Kobe Bartlett Sloan says, looks like the BBC design department had been watching the 1951 film When Worlds Collide.
See the picture?
Yes, yep. Kirby.
Yep.
Yes, Kirby. So, I don't. Oh, yes, we were waiting for Debbie to dictate.
I'm here. I'm here.
Word for word.
Oh, Alan God, no. T. Butchers. I can't do that word at the end. It looks like it's in Russian or something.
No, you don't have to rush it. Just try and. But before you do, so you can digest that word.
I can't. Seriously,
Lillian Robin says, but you are about to do Nymon. Not in the biblical sense, Lillian, to be fair. Carry on, Debbie. I'm going to lean back.
Snorting the processed Muppets or a tryst with tryst. Dear 20 Megabyters, Nightmare of Eden is, of course, a closely studied and hard-hitting expose on narcotics trading practices and the ruthless exploitation of indigenous species for nefarious and unethical purposes. Exploitation of innocent modes of travel, infiltration to get cooperation from those involved in respectable activities that are otherwise starved of resources and inventive ways of storing contraband for transportation are all covered very effectively. The Doctor's use of their own scheme to capture the perpetrators clearly points to the sort of counterintelligence and infiltrators to narco-collectives. It should be noted that while some ridicule the Mandrills as unconvincing and slightly ludicrous aliens, actually there is no reason why such aliens should not look exactly like large Muppets that have a propensity to flail their arms about like Kermit the Frog on a regular basis. We also learn that Iron Gron calmed down a lot over many centuries after he in fact survived his encounter with a third Doctor. After cleaning himself up a bit and losing copious amounts of hair, he got a responsible job as the captain of a spaceship called the Empress until being dismissed for substance abuse. Also, Ben Jackson's brother went one up on him by moving on from seafaring sailor to spacefaring policeman and presumably taking responsibility for coffee on the police space station, earning the nickname Officer Costa. Nice. All in all, Nightmare of Eden is an entertaining story which cannot be charged with any lack of originality or ambition. It does perhaps fill the role of melodrama rather than that a more gritty and realistic paradigm, but in this respect the actors certainly step up to the plate and deliver with gusto. Given the difficult financial situation brought about by previous inflation and a deeply dark and antagonistic government elected a short time before, so no prospect for improvement, it is a wonder they managed to get anything on screen at this point. It certainly managed to stick in my memories, which are very clear from original broadcast. A standout performance by Lewis Flanders as Trist. His cleverly futuristic accent, like nothing currently on Earth, rounds off a very enjoyable story. And here comes the word that I can't pronounce. Next up, Doctor Who and the Space Miniminifinu, or you can't be fit. Those are my thoughts, Alan P. Butcher.
Miniminifinu.
If Alan could actually tell us what that is, that would be very appreciated.
Google it. I'm sure it'll come up with the appropriate I'll Google it for you, Debbie.
He does put a comment on the site. It says, I assume Debbie could read ancient Greek. The word is, of course, roughly transcribed as Minotaurus.
Well, there you go.
Done, Mary, for picking that one up. So I didn't get that one. Okay, so well done. Yes,
I can't read ancient Greek. I have to look up Google Translate to do that, I'm afraid. Okay.
It's now time for this week's returning edition of You Won't Get This One.
Oh, God.
Now, as I said earlier on in the episode, I thought I might have some questions for this story, but I didn't. So we're going to refer to some Trivial Pursuit.
Done this one before.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't find my manuscript for the Doctor Who quiz book I wrote called The Ultimate Doctor Who Quiz Book, a title I didn't actually choose myself. The publishers decided, by the way. But you can find that title on Amazon. It's a Kindle thing. Yes, you can find it also on iTunes.
I purchased it.
Yeah, I need some other people to purchase it. I've never had royalties from those books, you know. So even though they didn't cost me anything to publish because that's all done and dusted, I hadn't had royalties from any of my books for about 5 years. So come on, people, buy Diary of an Unwilling Virgin, which is, you have to buy off eBay because it's out of print, but you can get it. Buy From Troy to Man, which is available as a Kindle book and an iTunes book thing. But you buy them. They're good, aren't they, Debbie? Oh, you haven't read them, have you? I'll forget that one then. So you really should delve into a specific line of literature known as the Diary of an Unwilling Virgin, because even if, well, you have to read that before you watch read Troy to Man. But I think Kirby's read it, haven't you, Kirby?
No.
Right, it's 2 points. Mary, have you read it?
Get some points, Mary.
This is appalling. You call yourself my friends.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
I'm totally appalled that you have not read that book, because it's worth reading. And there might not be that many Doctor Who references, although there are Doctor Who references in From Troy to Man, but because that's when it came back and that's when the book is set in 2005 or whatever. But just read it, for goodness sake. You can get it on Kindle, but it's best to have a proper book in your hand, and you can get them. Well, actually, before I move on with the quiz, I'm going to look on eBay and see how much they're going for. What's the eBay URL? ebay.co.uk. Here we go. Right. Okay. Diary. We used to do this feature, you know, on Doctor Who. But Diary.
A long time ago.
Of an Unwilling Virgin. Now, I'll tell you one of my redeeming memories from my time of not publicising this book was when I was asked by Cowes Primary School to talk about it in front of a school load of kids and trying to gloss over the virgin word, shall we say.
It was
a very awkward time for me. Right, okay, well, there's quite a lot of them available here on eBay. And you can get it, buy it now for £4.50. So there we go. £1.80. It's used with Music Magpie. And it says here, very good, The Diary of an Unwilling Virgin, Adam Pearson book, £2.54. So, guys, when it was on sale and it was on in print, it was £10 a copy. You can get them from really good. And it said it's good here, and I didn't say that. This is the seller. Okay. Diary of an Unwilling Virgin. Look it up on eBay. Or if you want to buy a Kindle version, it's definitely available on the Kindle or Amazon's Kindle thingamajig. Shall we do a quiz?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, right. So, Mary, who do you think is going to win the quiz? Obviously, it's Trivial Pursuit, random questions. Who do you think is going to win?
Debbie.
Interesting. And Debbie, who do you think is going to win?
I'm going for Kirby.
Okay.
He's on fire.
Kirby, who do you think is going to win?
Debbie.
Okay.
Can't pick yourself. So.
You can't pick yourself, indeed. Mary, who do you think is going to be in last place? Remembering, of course, you can't pick yourself.
I know. Knowing that, I guess I'll have to pick Kirby. And I can tell you, the other two are going to pick me, and they'll be absolutely
right. Yeah, sorry, Mary.
Okay, right then. Debbie, who do you think is going to be last?
Oh, Mary.
Okay, right then. So, and Kirby, who do you think? We've done that.
Mary.
Yeah, right. So, remember, you've got a joker each. And if I say, a reminder, because we haven't played this quiz for a while. If I say the words, you won't get this one, and you get it, you get double points. Okay. Everybody's gone quiet. That's a very unusual occurrence. Current scores are, on minus 1 point, it's Debbie. And in the lead, with no points each, it's Mary and Kirby. Mary's question. Who shot the master at the end of the time... in the end of The Last of the Time Lords? Who shot the master at the end of The Last of the Time Lords? Mary.
I'm going to guess whoever the Saxon.
Know.
Is that his name? Saxon?
Yes.
I know.
Oh, sorry.
And if it's wrong, then I don't know.
I'm going to go... Because you got half of it right. I'm going to give you a point for that. And Debbie?
Lucy Saxon.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So half a point for Mary and the other half for Debbie. Nothing goes into the bonus pot. Right then. I've lost my card. Oh, blast. Oh, here it is. Okay, next question goes to Debbie.
Yes.
Who was Martha Jones engaged to before she eventually married Mickey? You won't get this one.
It's the guy that plays Lucifer. I don't know.
You said I don't know. Sorry, that's the end of it.
It's a Tom, but that's about it.
Too late. No, you said you didn't know. Right then, and a point deducted for saying half of the answer when you'd already said you don't know. So,
thanks.
You're welcome. And Kirby, do you know? Oh, does anybody know? Oh, you don't know, Mary. So Kirby, do you know? Hang on,
it's
I've got
Tom.
Kirby
Tom.
Or Mary, do you know the answer to this question?
Tom.
I'm not going to give you that one because the answer on the card is Tom Milligan.
Oh.
I should have known
Tom Milligan.
To...
There you go.
Kirby.
Master.
In which episode did Charles Dickens read excerpts from A Christmas Carol to a captive audience?
Why has my brain just gone blank? Tie me down. Whoever can remember the name of that one, go ahead.
Okay, so it's... anybody?
The one with the girl. Oh, Quiet Dead.
There you go.
Well done.
I had to look at my little statue of the woman that I've got for a minute there.
You've got a statue of a woman, have you?
Of a woman.
I've got the model of the a lady being possessed by the Gelf. the old lady.
Oh, okay.
Okay, right then. Bonus spot, 3 points for this question. Nobody's played their jokers yet because nobody really knew the answers. And this is the question. Who played the Doctor between 1981 and 1984?
Peter Davidson.
It's supposed to say I know.
No, it doesn't matter. But that would help. And you could have played your joker and doubled it, but you didn't.
So I couldn't remember his name.
Mary!
And okay. He's really on the quiz
right. It's my favourite doctor, too.
You're not in quiz mode.
You're right.
So yeah, the current scores are.
Quiz mode makes me forget things like I'm quiet dead.
And last place, be quiet.
I'm never in quiz mode.
In last place with no points, Kirby. In second place with 1 point, Mary in the lead, despite being deducted several points, Debbie with 4 points. So this is Mary's question. Which member of the family of Blood created the Scarecrow Foot Soldiers?
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay, so that requires one of these. Oh, what earth was that noise?
Was anybody? It brother mine?
Well, Debbie, it's funny you should say that, but...
No.
No, it's son of mine.
Oh, son of mine.
Yes.
It's the same guy!
What are you on about? The name brother of the character was son of mine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right then. Debbie, sorry.
Yes.
Which Glenn Miller swing number did the Ninth Doctor and Rose dance to in the TARDIS alongside Captain Jack?
I don't know. Was it in the mood?
I don't know. Was it in the mood?
No, that's too late. It's not Glenn Miller's song to go to.
Oh, dear. See, I didn't something play my fall joke. Over. That sounded like something just fell down somewhere. What on earth are you lot doing?
Nothing.
Not me.
What's that?
No, I just let a cat out. Maybe you heard my door.
Yes.
Rather dramatic letting of a cat out, right then. you didn't say put the cat out, so I was say the fire extinguisher would have been very useful for that.
There you go.
I threw the cat out.
Right, I think it's Kirby's question, is it not?
Yeah.
Who gave Amy and Rory a prayer leaf that translated their daughter's name? Melody Pond, into the name she knew her by. River Song. Now, you won't get this one.
Oh, I can see her.
I can see her, but what was her name?
That's what I'm asking you.
I don't remember, sorry.
There's a pattern developing here. Right, anybody?
Is it Lorna something?
It is Lorna something, but that's not the answer. But a good effort, Debbie. I'll give you a point. It was Lorna Bucket. Well done. I'll give you a point. Actually, no, it has to be 2 points because it's double.
She said Lorna. I thought it's Lorna Bucket, but that doesn't sound right.
Well
done. No, yeah, not really Spacey.
Spacey or Gavin and Spacey. Gavin and Spacey.
Lorna Bucket is distantly related to Charlie Bucket from Willy Wonka.
No, moving on. Really?
Shut up. That was Kirby's question, wasn't it? So there's 3 points in the bonus pot. Of what organisation? Oh, for Christ's sake. Right. Now, for this one, it's I know before you shout in the answer. Are you ready? Of which organisation are Yates, Bell, Benton, Grant, Shaw and...
I know.
Go on then, Kirby.
Joker.
Oh, darn.
Don't mean coach him. Go on.
I already answered the unit.
Well, in that case, that's too late for your joker, mate. so that's good. That actually gives Kirby some points. So that changes the points to this. In last place with 1 point, Mary. In second place with 3 points, Kirby. In the lead with 8 points, Debbie. Nobody's played the joker. So the next question is Mary's. In 42... What trivia question about the Beatles and Elvis is one of the SS Pentallion doors sealed?
Oh, my God.
I don't remember. Pass it on.
I'd say that was quite a difficult question, but some nerds might know the answer. Anybody?
It had something to do with who had the most number ones.
I'm going to give you a point for that, Kirby. It's not quite right, but it's near enough, in my view. It was, Who had the most pre-download UK number ones?
Oh, so okay.
It's close enough in my view. Debbie might disagree, but I'm going to go with it. I'm the quiz master here, and I decide that it's worth a point.
No.
So you're disagreeing? Okay, fine. Debbie.
Yes.
On Appalapuchia.
Wait, who's question?
This is Debbie's Appalapuchia. The two Amys danced to what 1995 Europop hit by Los Del Rio?
Los Del Rio?
Mm.
Wasn't Las Ketchup, was it? I don't know.
Anybody?
What was the question?
Oh, for Christ's sake, it was difficult enough doing that blimmin' question. On Appalapuchia, the two Amys danced to what 1995 Europop hit by Los Del Rio?
What two Amys?
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness.
I asked the questions in this quiz. The answer was the Macarena.
Oh.
Right, Kirby.
Where are there two Amys?
Be quiet.
What?
Remember be when quiet. There was an older Amy and a younger
Amy?
Yeah, what's the name of that episode?
Yes, be quiet. It doesn't matter. We're moving on.
Now, what's the name of that episode?
I don't know.
The Girl Who Waited. Shut up.
Oh, The Girl Who Waited. Okay.
Right. Whose question? It was Kirby's question. Oh, God help us. What race of cat-like people worship the goddess Centauri? It's just you, Kirby.
Are we talking about the cat nuns?
What were they called?
I don't remember.
Oh, good grief. Anybody?
I'm out of it today, I guess.
Anybody?
No idea.
Okay. That wasn't a no idea. No, it was the Sisters of Plentitude.
Oh, yeah.
There are 4 points in the bonus pot.
That's not a race. That's a... So the males are also the Sisters of Plentitude?
Right, Kirby.
If there's males in there,
there's pedantry and then there's pedantry, and I think you just overdid.
Kirby. Point deducted. I'm only saying what's on the card. Right then, 4 points in the bonus pot for this question. What was the name of the Roald Dahl penned fantastical TV show that Ron Grainer composed the theme tune for? What's that got to do with Doctor Who?
What?
Oh, fuck. Do I have to read it again? I did a really good job on that first one.
No, I heard it. It's just that it has nothing to do with Doctor Who except for Ron Grainer.
We used to do with Doctor Who, but it's a question. I can only read what's on the card.
Well, can you answer it? I can't.
Do you know it? Do you know it, Kirby?
I can try. Is it the James and the Giant Peach?
Oh, a really good effort, Mary. I'm impressed with that. Don't get any points for it, but no, it wasn't. It was Tales of the Unexpected.
Okay.
Very good. Right then. Okay.
That was... Six,
was that a bonus pot question? I've lost where I was with that.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
We got it wrong. The bonus pot now goes up to 6, and we move back to the normal round. So, Mary.
Yes.
Current scores are, no one's played their jokers. Mary has 1 point. Kirby has 3 points. Debbie has 8 points. God knows how. Right, then, Mary. What is the name of the TARDIS internal alarm system that sounds when she is in imminent danger?
Oh, I'll do the joker on this. The cloister bell.
Yay!
Would be the correct answer. Okay. Debbie.
Yes?
What was the first name of the girl who told Donna she had lost 11 pounds in 5 days by using adipose capsules when she visited her?
Oh,
my gosh.
No idea.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even start to play the women's countdown tune there. Right,
I'm not going to try. I have no idea.
Anybody? It's all gone quiet over there.
Nope.
The answer, and I mentioned the name a few seconds ago, was Stacey. Funny enough. Okay, that was your question, Debbie, wasn't it? Right.
Yes.
Okay, so Kirby.
Master.
Got the card round the wrong way and nearly read the answer. In New Earth, what did the grass on the slopes of New York smell of?
Oh, I know.
I know.
Joker. Apples.
Yay!
Is the correct answer. So there's only one joker left now, and that belongs to Debbie.
Okay.
And what could happen if she plays it on this bonus pot question with this 8 points in the bonus pot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crikey.
Oh dear. Are you ready?
We just shut down the quiz and we all go home.
Right then, Debbie, are you ready?
Is this my question?
I love it. Who's got birds tweeting in the background?
Me. Sounds lovely.
Sorry. No, this is a
bonus pot.
A bonus
pot, yes. But you play your joker.
We've got a very loud robin that likes to come and sing in
our
tree.
I like robins, especially Lillian robins.
Oh, I'm going to call it Lillian from now on.
Yeah, call it Lillian. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. Where did I get it? Oh yeah, I was reading the question, wasn't I? In what year was the episode Fear Her set, Debbie? That was your fault, right? So who am I going to deduct a point from for cocking out? Right, start again.
I think I know that one, but I probably can't. Right,
whoa. Right. Answer the question.
I know.
Now.
Was it Fear Her?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, sorry, 2012.
You did play a joker, though. So and the reason that I went nearly went wrong there is because I was advising Debbie to play her joker if she got a chance to answer the question.
Yeah, but I got the question wrong because you asked me what year was the episode.
And she answered Fear Her.
Yeah. Well, why didn't you tell me that? You're trying to mislead me again, aren't you? Let's put it back to where it was and deduct a point.
So, I know, 2012.
I said it was 2012 straight afterwards, but we'd already obviously
another point deducted because you ruin the question. So it goes down to 6, and the bonus pot goes up to 10. So nobody gets in. No, not having that. No, I'm sorry, not having that. Moving on. Right then, Mary.
She's going to win anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Mary?
Yes.
For the benefit of the listeners who might not have caught that, the answer was 2012. Right, Mary. Every 500 years or so, the insectoid creatures of Solos evolve. But what is it that triggers this change?
Don't remember.
Oh, I nearly got the countdown music play there. Okay. Anybody? It's quiet over there. It's changing of the seasons. Was the answer to that one right?
What story was that?
That was the mutants.
Okay.
Debbie.
Hmm.
I've lost where I was. Here we are. What is the name of the vast open land in the centre of Manhattan where Hooverville was located?
Joker Central Park.
Joker Central Park is the correct answer. And all the Jokers have thankfully been played now. All right, Kirby.
Master.
What does a code 9 mean in the vocabulary of the UK government and units?
I have no idea.
You really didn't put any effort into that whatsoever, did you? Anybody?
What was the question?
Oh,
sorry.
For God's sake.
Right. Please don't deduct me another point just for asking. Right.
What does a code 9 mean in the vocabulary of the UK government and unit?
Get the doctor.
I'm going to go.
What happened to those 8 bonus points? Who got those?
Nobody.
No one. They went up and I got deducted.
Debbie cheated. She said the answer and she misled me by saying, was it Fear Her? Because I asked the questions here. I then got confused.
But you got on Debbie for that.
I know, but they didn't like it, so I got deducted.
No. Let me explain. Right. Right, I asked the question. The answer of the question is 2012. Debbie said, is it Fear Her? Now, she's asking me a question, which is not how the quiz worked. She shouldn't have been asking me the question because it was in fact the episode Fear Her, but that's not what the question was. So she got deducted from that.
2012.
And then she said the answer before she had an opportunity. It was somebody else I could have. So she got 2 points deducted and we moved on because then everybody knew the answer, so nobody could have answered it. So that's why it's left in the bonus spot. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Shame on you, Debbie.
God, we'll get the end of this at some point.
You know how important all this is.
Right, who have the last question after? Kirby, wasn't it? Is that right? Was the last question Kirby's while we're still alive?
What was the last question?
Oh, about the vocabulary, code 9, blah, because you said you didn't know.
Yes, that was mine.
There's a bonus pot question now. Jokers, so we couldn't really multiply this up, but it's 14 points left in the bonus pot for this question.
Wow.
What was the name of the stagehand at the Lorenzo Theatre who the Cult of Scarrow turned into a pig slave?
Oh,
Okay. It's all gone quiet again.
I thought it was...
Yeah, go on.
Is this bonus pot?
Bonus pot, yeah.
I thought it was Lorenzo.
Nope. One more for somebody else to go for.
Laszlo!
Laszlo, yeah.
Well done, Debbie. That went up to 15 points, that thing out when, because he got it wrong.
Okay, can we stop the quiz?
My brain is going to Lorenzo. Are you sure it's Lorenzo?
And it's funny Laszlo. Mary should say time to stop the quiz, because that wasn't even
Yeah, nobody's going to be able to overcome Debbie at this point.
Okay, right, so in last place at the moment with 5 points is Mary, in second place with 7 points is Kirby, and in the lead 25 points is Debbie. Right, so...
Yeah, but Mary's got 5 points. That's tremendous.
Don't be, that's not a very nice thing to say, Debbie.
I don't know if I should be happy about that. Or...
Right, Mary predicted Debbie to win, and Kirby to be at the bottom. And Debbie predicted Kirby to win. And Mary to be at the bottom. And
Tom?
Kirby predicted Tom to win. No, that's not wrong. Debbie to win. And
what
Mary
Melrose?
To be...
That was disgusting.
Did he burp? So the final score of this week's edition, the returning edition of You Won't Get This One, back after popular... What's the opposite to demand? What is the opposite to demand?
After a claim, huh?
Go away,
I think the opposite of demand is more of a what's a nice word, sort of
backed by popular recommendation.
No, the opposite.
Insist.
The opposite
backed
of
by
demand.
Your insistence.
Somebody might have to find the opposite. Whoever finds the opposite of demand can get a point. Somebody
refuse.
Google it.
Refuse.
Oh, sod it. No, not that sort of demand. Backed by popular refuse, that doesn't work.
Backed by oh,
forget
unpopular
it.
Demand.
Unpopular demand. That's the one. You're not getting more points to change your mind. Right then. So in last place was Mary with 10 points. In second place was Kirby with 28 points. And the winner is Debbie with 50 points. And that can now go into Kirby's list of who's won the quiz file.
Yes.
Thank you for that, Kirby. The live video has for some reason stopped.
Pardon?
The live video stopped itself without me asking it to.
Why does it do that?
I don't know, but it's...
how long has it been? Maybe it's the timing
thing. No, I don't know. I've posted it anyway. So people that probably got that may have been riveted to that quiz can listen to the aftermath of it. So back to where I was. What was I going to do? Oh, yes, FantasyCon news. There isn't much, really. What did I report on last week, Debbie?
The couple of the businesses that are joining us and some a new character, the guy who was in who had that marvelous fart scene in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. and also he was Jack Black in the School
yes,
of Rock
yeah,
stage
school
show.
Musical, the musical, yeah. Not High School Musical, sorry. I knew yes, what I meant.
David
School of Rock.
David Finn is the man you're talking of. Now, the other, obviously, developments we've had since then is, I thought I might have mentioned it last time, is that we have now got the funds to do the event.
Yeah.
So, it is definite. We didn't have it until a benefactor decided to. I don't want to embarrass them by naming. Decided to input
Who
the funds to pay for the pay for the rental of the Cowes Enterprise College, and also a massive load of the payments we need for the hotels and travel for the guests coming. So. Because of that, it's happening. It was going to happen anyway, but now it's happening with me being slightly more relaxed about
it. There wasn't, yeah.
No, strangely enough, we have actually sold a few tickets this week. There's things on the horizon.
I've got a few people up at the school who said they're going to buy tickets because their kids are so keen on it. Well, they, I had a couple of kids that I looked after this last week who are absolutely obsessed with Doctor Who.
After Vanessa very kindly put the banner up, and now the video is playing in the big screen at the school, that we have actually sold in the last week probably about 7 or 8 tickets, which is 7 or 8 tickets more than we sold in the last 2 weeks. So and also the Isle of Wight cosplay people have been sharing Robin Flux's advert as well, which is a great advert for the event. It does obviously lack a couple of the guests that are coming, but it doesn't matter because it's still being shared and people are liking it. I'm just excited about the fact that we've got the Staggering Stories team coming along to it. So
it's going to be so cool.
At least I hope they do come. I hope they're not going to change their minds when they see how much the Fairy Fair is. I would advise the Staggering Stories team.
How much it is.
I would advise them.
No, people are very surprised when they find out how much it is. That's why some of us don't get off.
If they come over by car, it's going to cost you £140. But I'm going to say, advise the Staggerers to park their car on the mainland and come over and either bus to Cowes or do it that way because it's going to be so. Oh, Debbie, give them a lift.
Over Red Jet, that's not too bad.
That too, and Debbie, give them a lift. We need a
master.
I've passed my driving test by then.
Yes, Kirby.
I am looking forward to seeing you pose with the head of Pertwee.
Oh, so am I looking forward to myself. I did actually pose with the head of Pertwee, which didn't belong to the Staggering Stories team, when I was in the Who store in Blackpool many years ago.
Yes, you've said that picture a couple of times. Yeah.
Next to the head of Pertwee in that picture was the head of Baker as well. That's Tom Baker. And Dave Simon, who owned that shop, still owns those artifacts and won't part with them, the git.
How many of those heads did they make?
I don't know. There was certainly a fifth Doctor one and a seventh and a fourth. Third, fourth and fifth I remember seeing. I can't remember. I can't vouch for any of the others and where they originally came from as well.
You know how every podcast has its own little quirks that are just amusing. I like the head of Pertwee.
I do too. We've got our own little mascot up in the corner there, which I'm not going to get him down because my TARDIS will fall down if I move, but the Woolly Five is our little mascot, and Woolly Five will be, of course, attending Fantasy.
Yay! Shall I bring my Woolly Dalek?
It's entirely up to you. I'm not going to deny anybody the opportunity of bringing anything woolly along to it. Scarves are usually quite good, but in the middle of the summer, I would imagine scarves are going to be a bit uncomfortable, but nevertheless.
Hey, we still wore them last time.
I didn't wear mine, I just draped it across the table. Alan T. Butcher wore his. On both occasions. The first occasion got absolutely drenched at Island Con 1.
Oh, yeah. God, that was funny.
I've got a photograph of him.
It was so wet, wasn't it? Everyone came in so soggy.
His hair went all flat. And he'd combed it up like David Tennant before then as well. Who won? That's what I was looking for. I need to be in contact, actually, with Lavazzi, because we're going to get some scarves in from Lavazzi. I reckon he's sort of semi-agreed to doing it. We now need to make it happen. Let's get some Lavazzi stock in to sell the punters at FantasyCon. Okay, right. Coming soon to whowon.co.uk, the online shop, because the real one doesn't exist anymore, is a load of big Finnish audio CDs, Alien Werewolf in London. That's interesting, isn't it? I'm going to open that one up because it's the seventh Doctor story, an Alien Werewolf in London, and it does rather look like Jessica. Oh, can't. So it's a small picture. Jessica Dudar, who is in she used to be an impressionist many years ago. She was in Spitting Image. Jessica. Oh, she was in Greatest Show in the Galaxy. Oh, I think it looked like she was in it anyway.
They're doing a series with her. Right now I'm listening to the one called The Moons of Belpana.
Jessica Martin.
She's the featured player in that. And you're right, she's the one.
I had an opportunity of inviting her along to FantasyCon, but I didn't think anybody would know her enough at this stage for it to make it worthwhile. But of course, plenty of people I can think of for next year. I certainly could have got her to come along. 8th of March. As it looks like what do they call that gang with what's her name? Oh, I can't remember these characters' names. You know, the
sound like the, me trying
the 11th, to the 11th Doctor's the 11th Doctor's cronies include that Silurian woman and the woman that Oh, God's sake. Oh.
Paternoster Gang.
That's the one. Yeah, it's a story containing those characters. No. Green Life, an audio book by David Llewellyn, which looks like... Oh, it's a Torchwood thing. But that doesn't look like Katie Manning on the cover. Oh, it is. So it's a Torchwood story with a very young version of John Barrowman picture and a Katie Manning looking a bit older picture on it. So quite intriguing sort of things coming out from Big Finish, available at whoone.co.uk. What else we got here? We've got the Doctor Who magazine 539 with a lovely picture of Jodie Whittaker with her eyes shut on the cover. Somebody was posting the other day about the difficulties in getting hold of Doctor Who magazine. Go to whoone.co.uk and get hold of it easily. You might have to wait a little bit for it to come through the post, but you will get it. Right, Lavazzi, as I spoke of recently, will hopefully be supplying visitors to FantasyCon with the opportunity to buy Doctor Who things like the scarves, like the question mark pullovers, excuse me, and maybe, possibly, some Star Trek and Sherlock items as well. We're in discussions.
To get Pandorica one that they have.
Well, we're just getting to send a load of stock that they think will sell. So that's great. Good old Lavazzi. So that essentially is that. The only thing I've got to look at now is Doctor Who news, because we have had a passing since we last did. In fact, we had quite a few passings in the celebrity world anyway, for some reason, over the last few days. A couple of fairly young ex-footballers have passed away. It's quite shocking in some ways. But sadly, Paul Darrow has passed away at the age of 78, and he wasn't very well. He appeared on Pointless Celebrities a few weeks ago, and I don't think he had any legs.
He was in a wheelchair, wasn't he?
And he was quite bloated, and it's quite unrecognisably him. But he was there doing... the famous Squid Show, the Pointless Celebrities, and he's passed away. He played Avon, by the way, in Blake 7, and he was in Doctor Who and the Silurians, and he was also in one of the least liked stories of Doctor Who, the Sixth Doctor era, which I actually quite liked, the Tyblash story. Again, I tend to like Doctor Who stories everybody hates for some reason. I don't know why that is, but yeah, he's a bit
I tend to agree with you. Although I haven't seen Timelash yet. So
again, it's one of those stories.
But yeah, you and I tend to have the same opinions for lots of Doctor Who.
I think it's one of the... Timelash, we'll come to it obviously in a few weeks, few months' time, is one of those stories that, again, was a good idea that could have been rendered better, but it had some great actors in it. I just love the idea of the Doctor wandering around the place, no spoilers, with H.G. Wells. I think it's a brilliant concept, but they perhaps could have done it slightly better.
Sounds interesting.
What are you on about? I thought you'd seen Timelash.
No, I've not seen Timelash. I just said that.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said you had, and that's why you like all the stories that I like. No spoilers. Anyway. And another exciting thing that I did actually share this on the 20MB.2 podcast Facebook group, that the Faceless Ones is being animated.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, but didn't we already have one episode of the Faceless Ones, or was it two episodes? Pauline Collins was in it, and was that the one, the last episode to feature Ben and Polly? Last story, sorry. I think that was
yes,
the one.
It was.
In the airport,
and there's, I know there's one episode that exists.
There's at least one. But yeah, but it's going to be animated, so that'll be cool, won't it? So that essentially concludes news and almost concludes the show. Then I'm going to check my calendar for next week before I commit myself to anything.
I thought we weren't doing it this week. I thought we were waiting. You were busy.
No, I'm not busy. Oh, yeah, it's the Isle of Wight Festival. I am busy next week, but I won't do a show. But I will say Biffy Clyro are the headlining act at the festival, and I'll probably be going home before that because they don't interest me in the slightest. I've already seen them a couple of times, and I don't think they're an appropriate headliner for a festival. They should have a legend act. So we'll probably go home, especially if it's raining. So, but we won't be recording that day because I won't have enough prep for it. But we will essentially, if everything goes to plan, be recording on Sunday, the 23rd of June, the day after Alicia's 22nd birthday. She's going to be 22 on the 22nd of June.
Oh,
interesting.
Yes. Okay.
What do you mean, oh my God? What's that supposed to mean?
Time flies.
No. Time flies.
Yeah, I remember you bear in mind that when we started the show, she was 12.
She was the co-host, and the reason she was one of the reasons I started listening to this.
Well, I do apologise. I've asked her several times. She's very disagreeable, shall we say. So she's no chance of coming.
She definitely looked put out to be at Izzy's party.
Well, I identified with the concept of you watching Doctor Who with your daughter.
Well, I do watch Doctor Who with my daughter, but it's my other daughter. But yes. Even getting her to come on the show, even when there's a new series, is
You know who wants to come on the show desperately?
Yeah.
Isla.
So why isn't she coming on the show?
But we record too late for her, really.
Oh, so you're blaming me then, eh? No, actually, you've got to blame me.
No, because it's a school night. It's Sunday. It's a school night. Again, you're blaming me. I'd rather she went to bed.
Well, she won't be that age forever, you know.
No, I know. Give it a couple more years, and then she won't want to watch Doctor Who, will she?
I reiterate. It's going to be, unless I get a job, the 23rd of June. So that's our next one, where we will be watching and reviewing The Thorns of Nymon.
Yeah!
And where the...
Kirby's been waiting for this.
And where Mary will be scathingly attacking The Horns of Nymon.
Okay. I've never seen it, so, I might
basically
be helping.
It is scene-chewing stuff, but I have to say, in my, from what I remember of it, thoroughly entertaining scene-chewing. For people who like Blue Peter, for people who like Blue Peter and pop stars, so if anyone who likes Sophie Ellis-Bextor, anybody who likes Blue Peter from that day, Janet Ellis is in it. Janet Ellis is Sophie Ellis-Bextor's mum, and she was a presenter on Blue Peter for a few years.
I love Janet Ellis.
And the funny thing was,
an extra
she was an extra. Yeah, she had lines. She had lines in this story.
We watched her have a pregnancy on Blue Peter.
Yes, that's right.
That.
She left. She did her Doctor Who. She went into Blue Peter. That she showed her scenes in Doctor Who on Blue Peter. Then she decided to get pregnant. And then they showed all the pregnancy that they brought in baby Sophie.
Yeah, they did scans of life and that, on Blue Peter, didn't they? It was
I'm
terrific.
Pretty sure for Sophie Ellis-Bextor herself, that's a forever embarrassing thing to have to live down to. But that is the case. We saw, we knew Sophie before Sophie knew Sophie. But there you go. Anyway, right, so that's in 2 weeks' time. So anybody who decided to listen to the show as a podcast, well done, because that's what it is. But until 2 weeks' time, and thoroughly enjoy Horns of Nymon as we very sort of we cruise towards the end of Tom Baker's penultimate series.
Aww.
Talking of Tom Baker, before I finish, apparently it's 30 years since Tom Baker did something in Doctor Who. I can't remember now. Somebody posted about it as an anniversary, a Tom Baker Doctor Who anniversary. Oh, I forgot what it was. I wish I'd mentioned it now. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.